Maybe veterans of the newspaper industry who see the new movie The Post about working in a newsroom in the so-called good old days might respond the way Richard Kramer does when he sees or reads or directs Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller. He knows the lingo because he lived it with his dad on the road. Is there just some incidental moment in the play that maybe the rest of us wouldn't notice, but you, having been raised in a family of traveling salespeople, say, oh, that's so true. I know that exactly.
Well, it comes in Charlie's eulogy, his graveside speech. He says, it comes with the territory. And I can remember hearing my dad say that when I was 10 years old.
Richard Kramer, director of the upcoming production of Death of a Salesman at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. We're reminded that playwright Arthur Miller told the story of what he called probably the most succinct reaction to the classic play. It was voiced by a man who, on leaving the theater, proclaimed, "I always said that that New England territory was no damn good." That from Arthur Miller in the introduction to his collected plays in Volume 1. But the territory covered by Death of a Salesman is much broader and certainly less geographical than that. When Willie Loman, those two large sample cases in hand, enters the set for Death of a Salesman in what is certainly one of the most famous walk-ons in modern stage history, he carries with him a whole lot of baggage. That remarkable set was originally designed for the play's premiere on February 10, 1949, with a multi-form concept that provided an efficient solution to the tactical problem of communicating the air of dream that clings to the place. A dream, as the playwright wrote, rising out of reality. Arthur Miller rarely tired of reciting the opening lines of the stage directions that set this landmark drama in motion. A melody is heard, played upon a flute. It is small and fine, telling of grass and trees and the horizon. The curtain rises. Willie Loman's father made flutes, then sold on his own terms what he previously shaped lovingly with his own hands. Willie's sample case, heavy though it may be, contains only mass-produced dry goods hawked in Boston, Waterbury, and other commercial markets up and down the vast New England territory traversed by the New York, New Haven, and Hartford Railway. The suitcase tells the whole story, that from Enoch Brater in Michigan Quarterly. And we'll keep the image of the suitcases in mind as we hear about the way the team at the Little Theater is preparing this production. At least three of these individuals did Death of a Salesman together 6 years ago, and they've been on their individual journeys since then, as people living their lives and as theater people. And each of them, and all of them together, are unpacking their individual characters under the careful guidance of their director, Richard Kramer, who calls the play his baby. The show will open this Friday and run for 3 weekends at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, with a visit midway through from Dr. Stephen Marino, founding editor of the Arthur Miller Journal and past president of the Arthur Miller Society. He'll offer a talk, and he'll lead a discussion about the play on Sunday, February 18th, after the matinee that day. In anticipation of that discussion, we had a discussion of our own around the art scene table with director Richard Kramer and with Carol Sweeney, who plays Linda Loman, and Mark Dansevich, who is Willie Loman. We pick up with Richard Kramer.
I'm the son of and the grandson of traveling salesmen, and I grew up hearing the jargon and hearing the stories and traveling with my dad on my spring breaks and Christmas breaks from school, learning about business and getting to know him at a different kind of a level.
So this rings true to you on so many levels.
Yeah, it's kind of in my blood. I think everybody else in the family, just about, they all became salesmen.
You clearly have a deep, rich, and much larger than personal vision for this production, but are there any other aspects of the show that resonate with your own experience?
You gotta love Ben. I enjoy Ben. And in fact, yesterday I got a look at his wardrobe, and it's going to be a hoot. It's really given us how I had envisioned him. My father had an uncle who practiced law out in Denver, and when he would come east and visit us, he had the gold nuggets in his cufflinks, and he wore a big 10-gallon hat and had a handlebar mustache. And so my whole life, when I read the play, I said, well, that's my dad's Uncle Floyd. That's who that is. So that's my role model for that part.
And Carol, you have done so many great roles. Have you done Linda before?
I had, in fact, almost exactly 6 years ago. Was that correct, Richard?
January 2012.
In a different theater. I went into audition thinking that, well, why should I even want to go to try to do it again? I've already done the role. But I learned something with this, that you just keep peeling back layers. And this time, this show has hit me a lot deeper than it did the first time. And I can only say that's because in our rehearsal process, Richard was excellent with helping us to pull back the layers. A good director doesn't give you a line reading. He leads you down the path and helps you make those discoveries on your own. So it's rooted in you. And he gives you the suggestion and says, what are you thinking about? And why are you doing this? So it's not just where I move when, but it's why. And he's been very great with that whole process. And I had an excellent director years ago. He's not with us anymore, but he said, remember that rehearsal means you are rehearing. So each time you hear this, and even early on in the process, I like to sit backstage and just listen to the show. Just listen, because they ask you what's being said about you when you're not there, and you should know how your character is described. So this time, I was able to dig even deeper with it. And of course, there's a new cast, with the exception of one person. Our Charlie is the same character who played the last time. So he's pretty cool. And everyone's wonderful. Everyone is giving and open. It's heavy. It's emotionally draining. But it's like they say, it's a good kind of tired. And it's growing. And you grow so much as an actor with a show of this caliber.
There are classic roles that a good actor wants to play, among them Willie Loman. Have you done it before?
No, this is my first time.
If there aren't traveling salespeople in your background, what is it that draws you to Willie Loman as a character?
Well, yeah, there aren't any traveling salesmen. There are a lot of coal miners, but no traveling salesmen. I think we share a lot of the same things. We're looking for the same things. Willie Loman, I think, is looking for answers to some questions, and so am I. There's a lot of things that we do have in common that I see after I read the script more and more and more.
And Richard, we mentioned your experience with the world of the traveling salesperson. What about your vision for this in a larger sense?
I think where I've come to this play is in considering where it speaks to the context of our country, what's happening. And when we did this play 6 years ago, we were in the midst of what they have since named the Great Recession. And we're told that the recession has ended. But northeastern Pennsylvania tends to be a place where good things don't come and bad things linger. And so here, while the rest of the country may be in great shape, we're still dealing with the after effects, the aftershocks of this horrible recession. And I think on and off through my entire adult lifetime, we've had bad times and good times. I don't think we've ever had a boom time in my whole life that I can remember, at least the years that I lived here. I was raised in upstate New York, but my family was from here. So I've always had a sense of context and place in this area. And so I felt like, having given it much thought and reading about it, it appeared like maybe this play could help people understand that if they were unemployed, or if they were underemployed, or if they were working poor, or if they were struggling, because I look in my own family and I see those who've left this area earning so much more than those who stayed in this area, we tend to beat ourselves up for these kinds of things. And I'd like people to realize this is not something that's totally within your control, and you needn't be beating yourself up for it. And I think the play says that strongly.
What about the whole sense of being in a society, no matter when it is, that everything's changing around you and feeling that you're being left behind? Do you think Willie
He doesn't react very well. No, he doesn't. When he was younger, I guess, and he was more attractive because he was younger. He's 60 now, but I think he did better as a salesman. As he's gotten older now, he's lost a lot of the friends he had in the business that helped him. He's older. He looks older. He's not maybe as charming as he used to be, so business isn't as good, and he's not reacting to it very well.
I don't think there are families who don't have tensions. Don't you feel, Mom?
Yes, there is that scene, too, where someone finally mentions the elephant in the room that we never told the truth in this house. And in my character, I had to look back at perhaps maybe when my mom, you know, in her era, you stayed with your husband. I mean, there's no reason why you can't look at the show and say, why didn't she just leave him? She's alone all the time. But she couldn't. And she says, because I love this man, he is the dearest man in the world to me. And I won't have anyone, you know, make him feel lonely or sad or blue. She's saying this to her sons. So she even wants to protect him from the sons if they want to try to approach him with the truth. So she's a bit desperate in that way, but she's a rock. She's the rock of the family. She's tolerated all of this. She's put up with him being away for so long. And just like my mom managed to juggle so many roles, and a lot of women did. So that's also woven into her fabric, too, is you didn't leave. You pursued what you went out for. You stuck to it, and you did not give up. You did not give up. So she is there for whatever he needs. And his fear, one of his biggest fears, was not being liked and not being accepted. And then what can he leave to his sons? What is his legacy? And we all, I think, ask ourselves when you hit a certain point in your life is, what am I going to? What will people remember about me? What will they remember? And that's his struggle, too. So, and it's heart-wrenching. But like any piece of good theater, we hold up the mirror and we let the audience see themselves. And that's when you've got them. When you can hear a pin drop out there because you touch that nerve. You touch that nerve.
And there are scenes that Linda has, for example, such as attention must be paid. It's so powerful.
It is. It is. And she's saying it to her sons because they're, in a sense, not bad-mouthing, but he hears everything that's wrong with Dad, and then this, and how come he's not this, and how come he's not more like Charlie, his friend, and then wait, he is your father. You know, he helped bring you into this world. He's giving you everything he can, and how dare you find any fault in this? And yes, he does have flaws, but we all do. And a family means we accept each other for our faults, for our good things and our bad things, and we make it work, because blood is thicker than water.
What about walking with Carol to get to those moments where she can be strong like that and say those words?
It's interesting because I didn't think she was going to play Linda Lohman this go-round. I knew she was going to audition, but I really wasn't picturing her playing the part. But a couple of things happened that convinced me she had to play the part again. We had to both play our respective parts in this production again. Just a little funny thing that happened. A couple of years ago, I was going to my grandson's basketball game, and I was having problems in their gym getting good digital pictures. So I thought, that must be because I'm trying to do them on a phone. I got to go back to one of my digital cameras and see if I can take a picture with my digital camera. So I was looking at the camera, I recharged the batteries in it, and I began looking at some of the videos I had captured on that camera. And one of them was a series of videos that I had done of the cast 6 years ago. And I had a wonderful little recording on that camera of Carol doing the eulogy, doing her graveside scene. And I sat there in my walk-in closet, clothes hanging all around, sitting there on the stool I usually use to sit down and tie my shoes, and looking at that video. And there I was in the middle of my closet crying, watching her perform that scene. And that stayed with me. And when I watched the auditions, I thought, I don't know who's going to play any other part in this play, but Carol has to play Linda Lohman again. If she's willing, I'm willing.
I never heard that story. Look at my face.
I thought I told her.
It's radio, but look at my face. Oh, my gosh.
And you've both grown since then.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How are you taking Willie through from the first moment we meet him to the end? How are you making Willie tick in this way?
The play is very emotional for me, and I go through it scene by scene, and each scene presents something new, and that's what drives me through the play, is that progression.
You don't think of Willie as someone in a play written back then?
No, 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 not at all. And it's easy to, because it was written in the 40s, and the attitude towards women, especially in the last few months, the last year, has changed. You know, I'm thinking to myself, what's Linda complaining about? She's got food on the table and she has shoes on her feet in the winter. So what more do you want? You know, I'm bringing in some money, and so why complain?
That, you know, that's interesting, because if you think about that, and I think we've all, I'm sure Erica yourself too, and any woman, or even I'm hoping men too, if you unravel this cord of how we got to where we are today, you can trace it way, 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 way back. So with you just saying now, Mark, about you should be happy with what you have, because of that, that's why we are where we are today, is because some woman had the strength to say, that's wrong, and me too, or whatever they're saying now. So it's good. It's going to take a long time, I think. But this play, we revisit why, that's why theater's so good. We're revisiting how perhaps we helped to perpetuate those ideals. And as far as women have come, there's still a lot more they have to do, I think, to show the fiber that they're made of, and that they should be treated equally and not taken for granted. We are not objects. We are, you know, functioning human beings who are intelligent and independent, and that's what I think we can take away from this too. So that's the universality, I think, of this play.
And if you left Willie back then, what were your options?
Nothing.
There weren't any options.
Nothing.
Woman in her 50s.
Where would you go? And that perhaps was created by him. Men that didn't, I don't want you getting a job. Why? Well, not that they were too proud. They were afraid. They were afraid. So darn you, Willie Loman.
The way I see Willie, he thrives on appearance over substance. And I think more than anything else, that's what comes to haunt him. And there's a scene where his next door neighbor, Charlie, says to him, says, I don't understand. You've got to have something to sell. If you have nothing to sell, how can you be a salesman all these years and not know that you must have something to sell? It's not just your attractiveness and your handshake and your smile and that people like you. You need something to sell. They need to need you for something.
See, I don't agree. I think if you're good-looking, attractive, good-looking people have an advantage. People treat them differently than unattractive people. And I think if you're a salesman, you're attractive and charming, I think you're going to get ahead no matter what you do. I think.
So you're saying that the reason he doesn't get ahead is because he's not attractive anymore?
At this point, I think that's what it is. But he tells the boys, you're
you're Adonises.
God.
Yeah,
you're Adonises.
I have two Adonises, he calls them.
And it's true. People who look good or attractive and well-built and thin get a lot more attention.
I agree with you, but I think that attractiveness factor only goes so far.
So far, yeah.
And I think that's where he fell apart.
But even
he just thought you could just have that,
but
not
certain,
have anything backing it up.
Definitely, definitely. But it gets you
in the door.
Noticed.
It'll get
in
you
the
in
door.
The door, yeah.
Right, but for some professions, sometimes that's all you need is to be attractive.
What does Charlie say at the end? Getting by in a shoe shine and a smile, I think, something like that. So, yeah.
When they start not smiling back.
That's it.
That's a disaster.
That's what
it is. And then
you
get a spot on your tie and you're finished.
Right. So it's the image. So when your image is fractured, or if the paint starts to peel off or something, that's...
Willie has a lot of other issues that cause him not to be a great salesman anymore.
Well, that's true.
But Linda must see something beyond that.
Well, she does. She, in one of her speeches to the boys, says that he has... A lot of people think he's lost his, and she says, balance... But he's exhausted. But there's a lot of good to him. So there must have been something early on that why she picked him, or he picked her and she agreed, or whatever. So I'm looking for them too. I mean, Willie is good-hearted. He's kind to me, except for, you know, some other dalliances, I guess, he had when he was lonely along the road or something. But he does have good in him. So again, when you're going through the script and the character description, there is a reason that they were put together. And he perhaps doesn't want to realize it, but he leans on her more than ever. And she's the foundation. She's the rock. You know, so there is some of his perhaps dementia borderline. She gives him that. She'll give him the pass and say, oh, no, you're just, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. But for how long can it be okay? Which leads her to the edge of his grave and why she can't wrench up a tear. Because she's been crying maybe for all these years internally. She's been crying and she's out. So at the end, we get maybe a final cry for help from her because of what she endured. Linda endured is what she did. She endured. But she's strong. She's tough. She's what every woman should have within herself, but should be able to build on that and not let someone take advantage of that, you know? And so now we're so many years later in society and we have learned. So there's a lesson. Attention must be paid to her too. There's a lesson to be learned there too.
What's the role of Charlie?
Well, Charlie's the next door neighbor and he's kind of like the Greek chorus in this play. He's got great lines and there's just a lot of homey wisdom in what he has to say. And I always, always loved Charlie. I had a little strange thing that happened 6 years ago when I directed this play with Charlie's eulogy, his graveside speech. What I had done was I had actually used his speech as part of my dad's eulogy. And I had read it over and over, literally hundreds of times. And I reached the point where I was hearing his words out of context. So our performer, who's also a dear friend of mine, who played that part 6 years ago and is playing it again now. When he rehearsed that scene and he delivered that speech, I said to him, I don't know. I don't like what I'm hearing. And I went through and discussed it with him and I asked him to make some alterations to see how that sounded. So he did. And when I heard him say it the way I had asked him to say it, I realized all those years I'd been hearing that speech out of context. And he didn't have that going against him like I did. And as soon as I heard it, I realized he was absolutely right. I was just used to hearing it isolated. And it needs to be part of the flow of the character. And he knows that character. He does a beautiful job.
We should mention the two sons, too. Eric Lutz, who's playing Happy, and
Adam Siwa. They're both fine actors.
Plays Biff.
And they've really grown into these roles. And when you see the four Lomans go together, this week we've rehearsed almost exclusively the scenes that they have around the kitchen table, typically. And it's really something to see. And that's where I have an advantage because they haven't seen it. I've seen it.
Tell us about how we can see it.
We start Friday the 9th, and we'll have an evening performance the 9th and the 10th, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday will be a 3 o'clock matinee. And we will then repeat the next two weekends. So there will be 9 performances all together, beginning the 9th, and then the final performance will be on the 25th, which is that third Sunday. The middle weekend is going to be very interesting. We're hosting one of the preeminent Arthur Miller scholars in the country. His name is Dr. Stephen Martino, and he'll be with us actually for two performances. He'll be attending the Saturday night performance, which will be the 17th. That'll be the second weekend. But on Sunday, after the matinee performance, he will be conducting a talk back. It'll begin with a short talk from him about his understanding of the play and perhaps a critique of what he sees in our performance that night. And then he'll open the floor up for questions of himself, of the cast, and of the director.
Tell folks to visit our website and get tickets through Ticketfly, and we'll see you at the theater.
Carol Sweeney, who plays Linda Lohman, with director Richard Kramer and actor Mark Dunsavage, who is Willie Lohman, speaking with us about Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller. Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre will kick off the new year with the classic. The shows run Friday, February 9th through Sunday, February 25th, with a special talk back on Sunday, February 18th. The shows are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3, and Little Theater is located at 537 North Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. For more information, on the web, ltwb.org, ltwb.org. And that's Arthur Miller's classic, Death of a Salesman, to be presented by the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, 537 North Main Street. The dates, February 9th, this Friday, opening night, through Sunday, February 25th, with a special talk back on Sunday, February 18th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3. For more information, on the web, ltwb.org, ltwb.org.